Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
That aluminum foil dragon, he's not quite as strong as the rest, but yeah. Boy, is he kind.
Welcome, listener, to the Lore Boys. I'm your host, Ethan Palmer, and with me today is Peter O'Donohue.
Hi!
And James Haley Joel Osment Miller.
Oh, man. Hi! Now I have to have that conversation in the Discord when everybody goes and looks at photos. Thanks a lot, dude.
Everyone's gonna know. Everyone's gonna know right away. They're gonna be like, oh, you know what? You're right. They're going to say, Ethan, you know what? You were right.
The current trend of whatever people think you're into is kind of too weird. So if we could change the weather a bit, I think I'd be...
Yeah, it's got to be better than what people are saying about you in the Discord now, right?
Yeah. God willing.
I don't take too much stock with someone who has an anime girl as their profile pic, so I'm not too worried.
Oh!
which is half the Discord, to be fair.
Yeah.
I have an animated picture of myself as my profile pic, so I guess I'm just as not credible. But
Pete's my favorite manga artist.
Yeah, thanks.
Mangaku or something. I bet you there's sort of like a word for it.
Like what a manga artist actually is, probably, yeah.
Yeah. And by a word for it, I just mean the Japanese word.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We're talking about the Feywild from Dungeons and Dragons today. Technically from Dungeons and Dragons 4th edition. Before the 4th edition, there was similar areas in the D&D canon, but they were usually called like the Plane of Fairies or something like that. Whereas the canonical Feywild, as we know it today, was introduced with 4E. So this was a request from Sketchy Jesus on the Discord. If you guys want to hear your topics talked about by we three Goombas, head on over to the Discord. There's a link in the description of this episode, and you can head on to the Lore Requests channel, where you can just post anything, and if we like it, we might talk about it, like I'm doing right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Good.
I hope you request something I already wanted to do.
Pretty much.
All you need is just to go to loreboys.com/about, get in the Discord, upload your favorite anime girls, your profile pic, and just get engaged with the community. Yeah.
I guess this goes to a belated happy anniversary to Sketchy Jesus and his girlfriend as well, because he did use his Patreon privileges to request a shout out, but that did not change the order in which we recorded. So here you go, buddy.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, it was, this is definitely, I think Jamie and Peter would agree that this is a me episode. I think I'm the only one to have ever done Dungeons and Dragons.
Yep.
And you just, Sketchy, you just asked for it, like, while I was writing the episode and 2 days before we recorded my episode. And I was like, there's no way I have time to get a script out for this. Yeah. I started working on it for the next episode, which is this one here. So the Feywild, do you guys want to take any Feywild guesses as to what it's all about? Maybe take a crack at describing what you think this plane of existence in the Dungeons and Dragons canon might be.
It's a lot of blues and purples, and there's like fairies, and there's like forests and like spirits and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, none of those things are wrong. Like all a lot of blues and purples and a lot of greens, and probably every other color, probably all the same colors that we have in the prime material plane, which is more like earth as we know it, just probably more colorful. Generally colors are probably brighter, more vibrant, more varied, more changing, things like that.
It's like the rainforest, basically. It's like Brazil.
Not necessarily. So again, there are forests, and they are like, it's not that the features are necessarily different than Earth, where the Earth has rainforests, like in Brazil. It also has deserts, and it also has cities. The Feywild probably would as well.
Naturally occurring cities.
naturally occurring and otherwise, I guess.
Yeah.
Would you say an anthill was the OG original city, naturally occurring city?
No, I'd probably give that to like a coral or something.
Okay, I like coral.
I give it to Waluigi, the primordial being, the primordial man.
But yeah, it has kind of similar landscapes. Though they just tend to have like a lot more exaggerated features, and we'll get into why those features are exaggerated. But
I guess based my guess off of a zone in the late in Shadowlands World of Warcraft retail, the latest one that came out, because there's a whole race called the Fae. And they're just little fairy people. And I figured Blizzard probably stole it from somewhere. But
I mean, we'll get into so the Fae are is the name of the creatures who inhabit the Fae Wild from D&D. I didn't actually look up if the term where the term Fae comes from, but I'm sure it comes from like ancient like meaning fairies, like a Renaissance or medieval era meaning fairy.
I can Jamie pull up the clip because I think it's Irish.
Yeah, very, very well could be for sure. And like the D&D canon 2 will have some recognizable figures from real world fiction. It's a funny phrase. who are basically characters or creatures in or fae creatures or fae characters.
All you juggalos and juggalettes, fae go is actually fairy juice for the go.
Juggalo is a race of fae creatures within the fae wild. Okay.
Absolutely. Well, that's fifth edition D&D. You can be like a half juggalo fighter or whatever.
Yeah, it's half man, half clown, I guess.
Whoop whoop. Anyway, I was going to say, I did Jamie pull up the clip. The etymology is 16th century English for fae.
There you go.
And it is the first half of fairy, which used to be spelled F-A-E-R-I-E.
Yeah. So there you go. Medieval. So starting at the top, I guess, the Feywild is a plane mirroring the prime material plane within the Great Wheel. Jamie and Peter, if you guys want to learn more about the Great Wheel, I think go back and listen to maybe our first D&D episode, which was like our 18th or 19th episode overall.
Season finale or something?
Was it the season and a half years ago? Was it the season finale? Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, I can't listen to my voice before I hit puberty, so I'm not going to listen to that.
Can't go back to the dark times.
No.
So the Feywild is a plane fueled by powerful magics, drawn from the very emotions of its inhabitants. And as such, it is subject to rapidly changing landscapes and contains a host of denizens all tapped into those magics. So it seems like the essence of the plane itself is tied to the emotions of the people who live there. So that's why when you get forests in the Feywild, the trees tend to be like much, much larger. And it tends to be much more like Byzantine and harder to navigate because that's how the creatures who would live in that forest want it to be.
Oh, okay. So,
them just wanting those things kind of shapes the world around them much more directly, like, or I guess more, much more indirectly than needing to actually, you know, grow trees big. It's just wanting it is enough. Enough people wanting the same thing is enough to make it happen there, essentially.
That's kind of scary. Yes,
you don't need to water them anymore.
Like mob mentality, like a storm could just start brewing like above a city who's angry or something. Like, it seems really scary.
Yeah, exactly. So there is this whimsical beauty, all those blues and purples that you mentioned, Jamie. Kind of like glossing over it, where it is very fairy like, and it is very like magical, but at the same time it is incredibly dangerous. And there is like a dark side where there's you know, negative emotions, and like creatures who just like, there's evil creatures in the Feywild who want to feed on, you know, the good and prey on them and prey on the weak kind of thing. So
don't go to the grumpy side of town. It's very
exactly.
This is all very familiar because I know, I think R.A. Salvatore, who has written a lot of like Forgotten Realms, like D&D books, worked on Kingdoms of Amalur, that like RPG that no one remembered, but like just recently got re-released called Kingdoms of Amalur Re-Reckoning. Like,
Re-Reckoning, yeah.
If you haven't played it, I played it when it was new. It's good. Yeah. But the races of elves in that are like the Seelie Fae. So he just like barely modified the name of that race when just like Control-C, Control-V, like his Dungeons & Dragons work already.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll get into, what the Seelie is and towards the end of the episode. But yeah, that's Seelie Fae is basically good aligned Fae. Whereas Unseelie Fae would be the evil Fae. And and we'll get into why that, yeah. why they're named that. And why do the goods get the, you know, the standalone? Why isn't the un prefix for the bad guys or the good guys, right?
Yeah.
never fair. No wonder they're bad guys. They get the short end of the stick all the time. So the Feywild is known for its vistas and sweeping ethereal charm. It's always cloaked in the long shadowed light of dusk or dawn, with the sun never truly rising nor setting past the horizon. So it's a lot like the polar regions on Earth.
Yes. Yeah.
But maybe more of an extent where it never tilts. So the sun just always kind of hovers. And the reason for that seems to be to just draw long shadows and kind of give it that beauty where nothing is ever laid bare in the light of day and nothing is ever like fully dark. As of night. So there's always like a sense of like mystery to it.
Is there a moon?
I don't know specifically. Okay. But like time and space in the Feywild, and we will get into it a bit later, is like really abstract. It's more of like a suggestion than hard and fast rules. So even if there were, like how light would reflect off the moon to cast light on the ground below is impossible to really say with like definitively.
But no, there's no like romantic sunsets. It's all romantic sun lows, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, usually you're in a forest or you're in a swamp or a bog or somewhere where you wouldn't be able to fully appreciate it anyway.
Take your lady out on a nice bog picnic. Like, immediately soaks through the blanket.
Yeah. You have to wear,
you can keep your wine chilled by just like pushing it 6 inches into the ground.
Yeah, you have to make sure to like put perfume down your like what is it, rubber socks or whatever, so you don't smell badly.
Yeah, make sure to check where you're laying your blanket for bog bodies.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So a few common comparisons to the Feywild can be Oz from The Wizard of Oz, Wonderland from Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, or the Spirit World from the Avatar franchise. So it's very like, I like Oz or Wonderland as points of reference, you know, the Cheshire Cat, all that stuff, the Smoking Caterpillar. It's all very inspired. Okay. Which was inspired by which and which came first, it's hard to tell, but also very... Midsummer Night's Dream, things like that. You know, the Fairy King, the Fairy Queen.
Yeah.
So it said that the Feywild was created by beings known as the Primordials or Dawn Titans. These are forces of godlike power made of entropy and raw elemental energy. The Primordials are as old as time. While Ao created the universe from the raw material of the Phlogiston, the Primordials rose from the elemental chaos unbidden. So... Ao, again, I think go back to our first D&D episode. Maybe it wasn't our first one. I have talked about it a bit, the creation of the worlds in D&D.
Yeah.
It was one of our earlier episodes, for sure. Ao is the one who created all, and from him all sprang. And then you have like the gods who kind of came as a result of him. But the Primordials seem to have just like happened on their own, kind of risen up from that Phlogiston or elemental chaos kind of on their own.
Okay.
So it's the timeline is obviously weird anytime you get into, I mean, look at real world religion with what Methuselah living to like 1200 or something.
Yeah. And
Noah living to 940. But especially when you get into fictional ones where it's, you know, usually not fleshed out. And it's usually from the point of view of a fictional historian writing a fictional account of what they think happened. It gets pretty messy, but it seems like the Primordials kind of came to be on their own. And ended up creating the Feywild at some point. So a quote from the 4th edition Dungeon Master's Guide. The Primordials form the world from the raw materials of the elemental chaos. Looking down on this work from the astral sea, the gods were fascinated with the world. Creatures of thought and ideal, the gods saw endless room for improvement in the Primordials' work, and their imaginings took form and substance from the abundance of creation stuff still drifting in the cosmos. Life spread across the face of the world. The churning elements resolved into oceans and landmasses. Diffused light became a sun and moon and stars. The gods drew astral essence and mixed it with the tiniest bits of creation stuff to create mortals to populate the world and worship them. Elves, dwarves, humans, and others appeared in this period of spontaneous creation. Resentful of the gods meddling in their work, the Primordials began a war that shook the universe, but the gods emerged victorious and the world remains as they have shaped it. As the world took shape, the Primordials found some pieces too vivid and bright and hurled them away. they found other pieces too murky and dark and flung them away as well. These discarded bits of creation clustered and merged and formed together in echoes of the shaping of the world. As the gods joined in the act of creation, more ripples spread out into the Feywild and the Shadowfell, bringing creatures to life there as echoes of the world's mortals. Thus, the world was born with two siblings, the bright Feywild and the dark Shadowfell. So the primordials created the world, which was one thing at first. The prime material plane was one thing at the time. And if you look at the Great Wheel cosmology now, which kind of describes how the planes are arrayed in Dungeons & Dragons,
okay.
There's an inner sphere, which is the prime material plane where humans live. It's fantasy Earth, right? And then kind of right next to it is the Feywild and the Shadowfell within that inner sphere. And then as you go to the outer sphere, you get, you know, the realms of the gods, the realms of, I think you get the four elements. So you get like earth, wind, water, and stone. Fire's in there too. Oh, earth is stone. So fire's one of them. But and then outside of that, you get the realms of the gods, you get the realms of demons, you get the realms of the devils, things like that.
How did the primordial dudes, they're just putting stuff together. They're being the builders. They're just like pure energy elements. And then like, are the fae kind of like, what are those things? Fruit flies that just show up like during creation. Like you don't know how they got in, but they just start coming out of nowhere. Like,
yeah. So
spontaneous.
Yeah.
Again, the timeline gets like a little messy, and I used a couple sources here. So there's, cause it's all like, it's hard to find like long histories of this, because usually when somebody writes one of these books, they'll write like, oh, and you know, this happened then, and then they'll go on to something completely different, because they're just trying to get like an entire world built rather than certain sections like fully fleshed out.
Right. Yeah.
So that was the fourth edition Dungeon Master's Guide, and that like that excerpt is kind of just like a sidebar excerpt, and that's like about as deep as it goes.
Okay.
There is a 2006 book called A Grand History of the Realms. From that, we know that life had begun to spring up across the Feywild as a single mysterious creator race called the Fey. But at some point, basically, the primordials created the one Earth, found some pieces of it too bright and some pieces of it too dark, so tore those pieces off, and those created the mirrored realms of the Feywild and the Shadowfell, and left kind of Earth as it is. The gods created life. Not the primordials. The gods kind of stood in opposition of the primordials, where they were a direct creation of Ao, but the primordials kind of just rose up on their own and started doing things.
Okay.
So the gods created life because they wanted worshippers, and the primordials didn't like it, so they went to war. That war is an event called the Dawn War, which, you know, raged for thousands and thousands of years, and the gods end up winning and casting the primordials into back into the elemental chaos, essentially. So just like, primordials don't really live here. Again, if you go back to that one of our early episodes, I talk about how the world in Dungeons and Dragons is called Aber Toril at the beginning of time. And now where you'll play your D&D campaign is just called Toril. And that's because when the Dawn War was happening, Ao ended up stepping in at the end and separates the primordials and the gods and gives Aber and splits the world into two, like two copies of it. And gives Aber to the primordials, and then gives Toril to the gods.
This so does sound like vaguely familiar.
This was
of course so 4 years ago.
For me too. I'm trying to. I don't remember what information I actually gave. Like I didn't go back and listen to those old episodes, but and then it's kind of the complexities are kind of compounded because with each edition they've kind of revised the histories and the stories and all that. Like I said, like before fourth edition, which came out in 2000, mid aughts basically, whereas D&D was invented in the 70s, before fourth edition there was no Feywild, so like this story must have come about since then, and there's like older stories that existed in previous editions which now are like not necessarily decanonized, just not officially canonized, and so we are kind of picking and choosing which aspects we want. But basically we're saying primordials created the world, tore off the extremes of it, and put them into the Feywild and the Shadowfell.
Right. Yeah.
The second half of your monster manual is like the New Testament.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the D&D, D&D guide.
When the Primordial was eating his banana, he took off those like long white strands and threw them in one pile, and the brown bits and threw them in another pile. And
yeah.
The fruit flies that are the Feywild. Exactly.
Yeah.
They showed up.
He found found that parts of his banana were too dark. Yeah. Cast them out into space.
So we know from that 2006 book, A Grand History of the Realms, that there was this kind of creator race in the Feywild, the original fruit flies in the Feywild. They were just called the Fey, which probably gave rise to the name the Feywild at some point, right? Like, cool. These Fey eventually create more recognizable entities, the Korreds, sprites, who you guys can probably imagine what a sprite is, and pixies, fairies, those kind of things.
Coming to bed.
Yeah, exactly. And life in the Feywild takes off from there. I guess just for a sense of scale, time-wise, this is about 36,000 years ago in what is current day in D&D Beyond.
Okay.
And that was like the year negative 34,000. So in a real-world historical context, like way older
ice
than
age.
Civilization.
Yeah.
that's three times as old as civilization. Three times older than farming, basically. three and a half.
Pixie sticks had no agriculture.
Yeah, yeah.
they were a nomadic show.
Do they grow there? Like, you take scissors and you like cut it, and you have to like pull it up to your face real quick because all the sugar is falling out. Or...
Well, I think you'd like cut it off of the vine, like Bear Grylls. It's just like, oh, it's so fresh, just like sugar pouring out.
Just like on his back, like pixie stick held between his legs, just dumping it into his own mouth.
That was the early days of the Fae too. So they were kind of barbaric. They would like the bad Fae, they would like tie him down and grow the pixie sticks right through their back and out the front of their chest. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Classic torture. Yeah.
I mean, these tribal Fae used every part of the pixie stick. It's made out of the plastic straws.
So this is negative 34,000 Dale Reckoning. Some 7,000 years later, would the first Fae migrate to Aber Toril. So the Primordials had, you know, the gods had created life. The Primordials split the one world into three worlds and split life, the life that the gods had created with it. So those Fae, that progenitor race, were created by the gods, presumably. And when the Primordials split the Feywild into its own world, presumably they saw the Fey as too bright as well, and so also like sent them to their own places. So about 7,000 years after the Fey are kind of creating new life on the Feywild, we have some migrating back to Aber Toril, so traversing the plains. It only took them 7,000 years to master interdimensional travel, basically.
Better than us.
A sight better than us, I'd say.
Yeah.
So at the time, dragons were the dominant race on Aber Toril. So basically these Fae are migrating back, and dragons are the only creatures they really meet. Dragons in D&D, some of them are good, some of them are bad, but they are extremely powerful, regardless of what you think. And
is it color dependent? Like, are some, like black dragons are default evil, and like, so are red dragons and shit, right? Or
so are white dragons.
Are white default as evil.
Yeah, so it's basically broken into two, metallic and chromatic.
Yeah.
Whereas chromatic is every color, metallic is the shiny versions are the good ones. So gold is the counterpart to red. So gold,
okay, so like
gold
a
and
gold,
red,
silver, brass, bronze dragons.
Exactly.
Good guys.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. So gold and red both breathe fire. It's just gold is good, red is bad.
Okay.
Basically.
That aluminum foil dragon, he's not quite as strong as the rest, but
boy
is he kind, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the crumpled up aluminum folded into a decorative swan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You finish your dinner at a restaurant, they fold it up into a dragon for you. And...
Yeah.
One, like, two lopsided googly eyes on it.
Yeah, yeah.
My mom was very proud of my aluminum foil dragon, you fucker. Okay.
It's one of the good ones. We just said it. Yeah.
So the Fae come over, they run into dragons, and there's some conflicts with dragons, obviously, as they're trying to establish a presence on Aber Toril. Needing reinforcements, the Fae bring over the first elves to the continent to help them establish a presence. So elves were a Fae race originally, lived entirely in the Feywild, and the Fae at some point brought them over specifically to help them fight dragons and to populate Aber Toril with featherless chickens or whatever Pluto said. So while the incursion of the Fae did not last long, many proto-elves remained in Aber Toril and eventually become the elves we know today. So the obviously, because we know that the Fae don't rule Earth, you know, the president of China is not a many antlered deer, but instead a but a mortal man.
I thought he was a bear. So,
a mortal stuffed bear.
So yeah, so since we know that they didn't end up taking over Earth, like obviously their war against the dragons didn't work, but a lot of elves stay, and that's why there's elves in the D&D world today, basically, okay. Because the Fae brought their ancestors over at some point and then didn't give them a return ticket.
Oh.
We may not know who exactly these proto-Fae were, nor much about them, but we do know a fair amount about the Fae who remain today. So the ancient elves diverge, forming the elves of Aber Toril, and then they also create the Eladrin, who are the elves who basically either stayed in the Feywild or returned with the Fae at the time. So the Eladrin were a playable race in 4E. They're not in 5th edition, but they also could be, and you just use an elf stat block if you wanted. But they're basically elves that have remained in the Feywild ever since, and so are probably much more magical and much more tied to magic and emotions and things like that. Separate, basically elf cousins.
Cool.
Other creatures, the pixie sticks we mentioned, red caps. Red caps are these, they're kind of like garden gnomes. They have red hats, obviously, and they wear big iron shoes, always.
I had imagined them as like little mushroom guys.
Yeah, so they sprout up in the Feywild. They're spawned from the blood of a person who is injured in the Feywild. So if you travel to the Feywild and get cut, where your blood drops, red cap mushrooms will sprout, essentially, and then they'll just keep growing until they end up like these gnomes.
Okay.
Are
you responsible for these gnomes?
Yeah, you just cut yourself in the kitchen, like, hurry, hurry, go outside. We're going to get red caps again. Like, we're going to be woken up by gnomes in the night. Yeah. Little clam.
I'm going to be a dad. Yeah, that's it, exactly. It's just like, oh, damn, you get like a paper cut or something, and then all of a sudden you've got child support payments for a, whatever, like, foot-tall bearded man.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
They're not nice guys. These are unseelie fae.
Okay.
Basically, they cease to exist if they do not coat their caps in fresh blood every 3 days at least. So they have to kill things and dunk, like dip their hat in the blood just to, otherwise they'll just cease to be. They'll just disappear.
I hate these
guys. They'll Marty McFly in Back to the Future. Essentially.
Yeah. Well, that's like, you've got like the prom scene from Carrie and you've got the prom scene from Back to the Future. What, like, you just need that fusion. You need to dunk the pig's blood on them.
Exactly.
When one of the red caps is whatever, like queen of the prom.
Yeah. George McFly punches Biff, and Biff's like nose explodes in a shower of blood and sprays Marty McFly.
Yeah.
Who is then saved from?
That's just how that movie went.
Do you think there's like an unethical corporation just to create iron shoes where they're like, only bring them into life for 3 days and then watch them fade away, like just in pain, like literally a blood farm just to get the shoes going. But
the shoes stay.
It's knowing what corporations do, where like currently in our world, Amy, I mean, I guarantee it.
Yeah, you know what, Pete, you make a good point. That is what Nike does.
Yeah, you're right. That's exactly
what they do. Like, we call them sweatshops, but Blood Farm would be a good name for them too.
Yeah, so you've got they need blood every 3 days, and they wear nothing but like Air Jordans, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Just do it, okay? So those are some of the Fae. I also listed Dryads, who are like spirits of trees, essentially.
Hot tree bitches, right?
Hot tree ladies, if you will.
Hell yeah.
hags, things like that. These things called Fomorians. Yeah, there's lots of different kinds of fae. They come in all shapes and sizes.
Yeah, dryads have that song, DAP, I think it's called.
Yeah,
dryad pussy.
Dryad. Very good. The most powerful creatures are known as archfey. Possessing of powers to rival the gods, the archfey are able to manipulate the fabric of the Feywild and its magics to change reality. Some of them, like Hearsome, the Prince of Fools, are powerful fey of an existing race. In Hearsome's case, he was basically the most powerful satyr. He is born of another archfey in the earliest days of the Feywild.
Okay.
Other archfey, like Hearsome's father, Oberon, is ancient, said to be the awakened spirit of nature, or perhaps of a great forest. He's also known as the Green Lord, simply. Yeah, so the name Oberon might be familiar. Bonus points to whoever can tell me where it's from.
You mentioned Midsummer's Night's Dream.
I did, yeah.
Earlier.
Yeah. So
Midsummer Night's Dream. I put too many possessive S's in there. Midsummer Night's Dream, yeah.
Midsummer's Night's Dreams.
By Shakespeare's.
Yeah,
by Shakespeare's. Yeah, he's king of the fairies in that.
Yeah, he's king of the fairies. Another archfey with a recognizable name, Titania.
Yeah,
the queen of summer, who's Oberon's wife in Midsummer Night's Dream. Also, Oberon's wife in D&D lore.
There are paired warframes as well, Oberon and Titania, who are both kind of like nature-y themed.
Yeah,
cool.
Oberon is the king of fairies in medieval and Renaissance literature. It's not specifically a Shakespeare thing, but he was a character in Shakespeare's play.
Yeah.
There's also the archfey Baba Yaga. Do you guys know the story of
I know about Baba Yaga? Arthur, because the worldly girl who... So I know a bunch of the voice actors from Arthur because they're all from Montreal, right? Yeah. I don't know who did... I want to say Sue Ellen, who was like the girl whose parents took her around the world a lot. Anyway, sure. That show introduced me to the Baba Yaga, which is like a witch who lives in a little hut that is astride two giant chicken legs that just runs through the forest.
Exactly. one of the most recognizable characters from Slavic lore. It's Russian folklore.
Yeah.
She's a powerful witch who lives in a hut described as standing on chicken legs. Her depictions vary greatly across tales, ranging from a child-eating monster to helping a protagonist find his missing bride. She is probably the most folklore stories about any one character might be about Baba Yaga, just because she spans like Russian and Eastern European. And she's basically I spent a good amount of time on her Wikipedia page, actually, because I love Russian folklore specifically, things like the Leshen and stuff like that. But
okay, yeah.
Baba Yaga specifically, she has over what are called 70 story types that she's associated with, which is just like 70 different archetypes of folk stories involve the Baba Yaga. Not 70 stories, but 70 like types she appears in, and she appears in like thousands of individual stories, and every village in Russia would have like their own Baba Yaga story back in the day.
The most written about woman in folklore is the Baba Yaga.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So you got like the Baba Yaga's, like what's the Jack jump over the candlestick thing? Like that's an old, what's it called?
The dish ran away.
A nursery rhyme or whatever.
So you got your nursery rhymes. You got Baba Yaga's an idiot. So Baba Yaga walks into a bar.
Why did the bar has
to be on bird legs as well, so she can cross.
Why did Baba Yaga cross the road? Because she had chicken legs for her house, you know.
There you go.
Classic.
So these are just a few of the inhabitants of the Feywild. Another archfey is the Queen of Air and Darkness, which is a T.H. White, I think, who wrote The Once and Future King. The sequel to that book was called The Queen of Air and Darkness. It comes from a poem in the 30s. These are archfey. These are the most powerful ones. After the break, we could talk a bit more about the geography of the Feywild, and then we'll dive a bit into its history. But before then, here's a message from our sponsors.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards?
Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, welcome back. We're talking about the Feywild. We talked a bit about the people who live there. Now we're going to jump into what the heck is it? I said it's like Oz or Wonderland or the spirit world from Avatar The Last Airbender. But what does that mean, huh?
Yeah.
So it's an echo to the Prime Material Plane, which basically means its geography is very similar to Toril's, but it's not identical. The Feywild is said to be much more beautiful, with taller mountains, rivers more meandering, and flowers blossoming in impossible colors, as well as more blues and purples, as Jamie would say. Sites and locations.
Does that just mean colors now, or actually blues and purples?
Yeah, blues and purples, whatever.
I like the idea of saying something is so beautiful because it's got more blue and purple in it.
Okay. I'm a purple Sten. Purple and gold, top tier colors, as far as I'm concerned.
I like purple altogether. It was the color of my school that I went to, so it was like, we bleed purple was the whole thing. But blues and purples are just what I call colors now. Every time I go to the restaurant and I scream at the waitress to bring me the blues and purples so I can color on the mat.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is this greens? Get it out of my sight.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about red? Because that's just a combination of blue and red. Just a combination of blue and red.
I remember you used to say it was pretty fast, so.
I've often been one to advocate for the speed of red.
Red is fast.
Yeah.
Red is the fastest color, I think. It's pretty fair to say.
Yeah. I mean, it's the Warhammer film they made, Cars, with Lightning McQueen.
Yeah.
The Primarch of the car.
There's kind of like the cars. There's kind of like like red means stop, but it also means fast. So there's kind of like this pushing of like two opposite ideas against each other, and it's exciting.
I get rock hard at a stop sign in a red car, dude. You know exactly. Yeah.
It's the tension.
Like, it is. You're just like, oh yeah.
So right, but so wrong. So sites and locations in the Feywild, red or otherwise, are also mirrored, though the importance placed on them can vary drastically. So a major city on Toril, with a sprawl of buildings and tens of thousands of people, will exist in the same place in the Feywild. So if you have the town of Tribor on Toril, on the Sword Coast, there will be a Sword Coast in the Feywild, and there will be a town of Toril. But again, what people who live in the Feywild feel about that town may impact how the town actually exists.
So you'd have like the New York Stock Exchange in the human world, and then you'd have the O'Fallon, Missouri Stock Exchange in the Feywild, correct?
Yeah.
The importance of every city has shifted drastically.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I think about it like whenever you dream about like your elementary school or some like a location from a really long time ago, but the layout's just a little bit different, you know, like there's a secret passage that wasn't quite there before and things like that.
Yeah.
But
I had a dream last night that Ethan was my roommate and we lived in an apartment that was like a fusion of a bunch of apartments that both he and I had lived in, parts of mine's, parts of his that I've been to. Oh. And for some reason, this dream was very quick. I remember I was sitting on the couch just like watching TV in a room from one of my apartments, and Ethan was in the kitchen from one of his apartments, and he just like takes out like a Tupperware, and he's just like, hey man, can I eat some of this popcorn chicken? And I was like, yeah, no problem. And then I just woke up.
It was
like,
cool.
It was like 3:30 in the morning. This was last night.
Ethan's a vegetarian.
I know.
And you gotta love a good mundane dream, eh? Just like, oh, that was weird.
It was very low light too. I remember the rooms all being quite dark, but it was just like in this dream, Ethan and I lived together.
So there's mirrored locations. So a city in Toril might be not much to look at in the Feywild. Whereas, you know, a large tree on Toril in the Feywild might be just like this, you know, giant, you know, tree which touches the sky and has an entire like race of fairy creatures living in it, essentially.
Okay.
And it's just the importance that those fairy creatures would have placed on that tree.
Okay.
Even an area like the Underdark, which is a continent spanning series of cave beneath the continent of Faerûn on Toril, is mirrored in the Feywild by a place called the Feydark, creatively. still sprawling caves, the Feydark is full of bioluminescent plants and fungi, so it's much, again, just much brighter. Whereas the Underdark is very, like, grim, I guess, and dark all the time, and it's, you know, there's the spider queen Lolth and the drow who live there. Mm-hmm. The Feydark seems to be more like the Skyrim Underdark, where you find, like, the Crimson Nurnroot for the first time.
There's
huge mushrooms which give off like a ton of light.
That's kind of funny. Like the I don't know like how much I can talk. It's like anyway, the theme of the Underdark in the Chris Pine D&D film is very much the Feydark and not the Underdark.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
it'd be a great place for a rave because like all you have like all these like glow in the dark things, and then also like the whole world go like bases itself off of vibes, so they'd probably it'd be like
they have new glowy things. They have Darude Sandstorm play from the speakers around like the steeple at the mosque in the center of town. Prayer from the Quran.
they just got it's just bells, but it's bells to the tune of
can you imagine like regular church sized bells timed in such a way where the clappers could play Darude Sandstorm?
It's a lot of the same note over and over again. So you'd probably need multiple bells. I'm thinking like maybe you get bells like alongside of what like basically like a roller coaster that has a hammer sticking off the side of it. So it just hits all the bells on the way down. Maybe I'm thinking too much of like how to make songs in like Stardew Valley and Minecraft and stuff like that.
I was thinking of like the actual an actual church bell, which like you know has like the gears and the rope that rock it, and the clapper is the thing that makes the sound when it actually hits the walls. I wasn't thinking of like a chime where that you would obviously install next to your roller coaster.
There's
that
a problem though, with that one big bell, you can't hit it fast. Like it rings for so long, you can't hit it fast enough to go like duga duga duga. You know what I mean? So you almost
you can have multiple bells though in the one. You can have multiple bells in the one mechanism though. A lot of more elaborate churches will. Yeah,
yeah. Oh. That's what I was thinking was like multiple bells because I was not thinking of a chime with a with a track next to it. Obviously,
Knox Presbyterian in the town that we grew up might be too small to have multiple bells, but a lot of bigger churches will.
Right. Okay. Whenever we have our lore church, we can work that out.
We're not opening a lore church until we figure out how to make Darude Sandstorm and play on the bells.
We could start with like an amusement park. So just in case the roller coaster doesn't work out, we could fall Orland. Back. Into...
I think once we get to the point where we are making enough money on patreon.com/theloreboys that we need to worry about tax evasion, then we'll start a church.
Good point.
So the Feywild. Despite landmarks crossing over between the two worlds, understanding the geography of Toril won't necessarily help you navigate the Feywild. Kind of like I said before, distances and locations are kind of a suggestion. Distances are said to twist incomprehensibly. While a journey from A to B might take you an hour on foot, traveling the same route from B to A could inexplicably take 10 times as long.
Yeah, Apple Maps would immediately crash your phone in that case.
Yeah, exactly.
Who knows how far the popcorn chicken is away, even if you are just in the living room.
When Ethan's eating my popcorn chicken in my dreams.
And Apple Maps in the Feywild is, of course, just maps drawn on apples that grow on the map tree.
Yeah.
And they, like, light up on little, like, paths on it. Yeah, that'd be cute.
It's all written in, like little bioluminescent caterpillars.
Yeah. That, like,
While a lot of the Feywild will share a one-to-one geography with the Prime Material Plane, the biggest differences often come from the powers that be in either realm. Like I said before, the elves are said to have originated in the Feywild, though millennia ago there was a diaspora of all but the Eladrin. The Eladrin who remained have maintained citadels and even kingdoms in the Feywild. Pieces of their domain, such as the Eladrin settlement of New Sharindar, the hidden city of Evereska, or the entire kingdom of Evermeet, were even built at places where the veil between the Feywild and the Primaterial plane wear thin, meaning Amaresca that they're
able... Sounds like tap water that
you, yeah, it does, yeah.
That you would sell in a bottle.
Basically, the fact that they built these cities here means that the cities exist in both planes. So that there's literally the city of New Sharandar on Toril and also in the Feywild. And for a lot of like the Eladrin, it's really easy for them to kind of like move back and forth, like in the same city, just like crossing the street, crossing in like separate dimensions, essentially.
Cool.
Making things harder to pop into the Feywild for a visit is the perception of time within the plane. While visiting the Feywild, time passes normally for you, relatively. But for your friends and loved ones back home, it wouldn't be the same. So normally time in the Feywild seems to pass much slower, with much more relative time passing in the Prime Material plane compared to the time you're experiencing.
So when you go in and you came back and it was like 1 minute, in the real world, is it like 2 minutes or is it 30 seconds? Like, is it?
It could be like 2 minutes. It could be 2 minutes. It could be 10 years. It's really hard to say. Okay. Or it could be 30 seconds. It
so seems you're going to lose often. More? Oh, wait, sorry.
Yeah. Okay. It seems most often you lose time. It is possible that you actually gain time, but most often you lose time. So you can go see a play in the Feywild, that, you know, some open air amphitheater, and like your children can grow old and die in that time, in like the hour and a half that you're there.
Oh, in the Feywild, in their theater, they don't have the fairy king and the fairy queen. They just have the king and the queen because it's their thing.
Look at them. They have no wings.
I like Jamie's idea that it's just like, oh, yeah, it's like, oh, no, it's such a crazy dimension. 1 minute there is 2 minutes here. I'm going to be slightly late for most of my appointments.
That's not gonna go fast though, like a week, 2 weeks, your
so that's
life
the thing. With only the one point of reference, 1 minute to 2 minutes with only the single point of data, we don't know if it's double the time or if it's just 1 minute
that's
more.
That's true. Yeah.
One more, it's if you stay a week in the Feywild, a week and 1 minute has passed back home.
Yeah.
You always lose a minute in transit.
It's like, remember to change your clocks, everybody.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, again, the losing time is not a firm rule. Sometimes time can pass quicker in the Feywild as well, with you enjoying most of a lifetime only to return to Abra Toril to find that home has barely moved on without you.
Hello, son. I'm going to a show in the Feywild. Here is 8 birthday presents, just in case.
Just in case.
Just in case I miss them.
So, Loreboy's canon. Since the magical properties of the Feywild is tied to the emotions of the inhabitants, which is canonized and something that's been established.
Time flies when you're having fun.
I like to think that time flies when you're having fun. So I think that your perception of time passing is faster or slower depending on your own emotions.
All right.
If you're eager or anxious to get back home, I like to think that time would probably move quicker. Like if you're trying really hard to get out of the Feywild and get back home, it's probably making time go slower for you.
Yeah, I was going to say it would make it go slower in that case, because like when you're anxious, it does feel like things are moving slower. Like an hour takes 5 hours, basically.
You're moving slower, but everything else is moving too fast, and like you can't keep up with stuff. It's also like a twist of irony, which seems like very appropriate for the Feywild. It's all about like pranks and mischievousness, and like the fact that the plane would play a joke on you, like, haha, you wanted to get back before your family died of old age.
Gotcha.
very thematic, I think. The time that you lose also seems to exist in like a planar tab. The bill needs to get paid when you leave. So many who venture into the Feywild return to find themselves just utterly exhausted or dying of hunger or thirst. Some people, if you spend enough time in the Feywild, you'll come back and you'll just crumble to dust because it's just like too much time has passed. And your body back in the Prime Material plane is trying to like readjust to the timeline, and you just age like 80 years.
It is like a rave there. It's the MDMA crash.
I'm thinking about the trickster side of things or like the pranks and stuff. I just picture like this little maneuver is going to cost us 51 years. Goes in, like slips on a banana peel, lands on a whoopee cushion, goes back and his family's dead. Like,
crushes his pixie sticks. Gets a little cut on his finger, and these friggin' like garden gnomes pop up to laugh at him. Like,
yeah, like, aww. crushes his pixie stick. Yeah, Jean pockets are just filled with sour powder. He's like, oh, god damn it.
Not again.
At my old school, we never outlived our children.
So many people without an ancestry to the Fae, or the creatures who inhabit it, the Feywild in general, also will find their memories completely wiped upon returning from a visit to the Feywild. So, you know, the in-game canon is, or the in-game mechanics, I guess, is like if your characters, if you're the DM and your characters go to the Feywild and then they return to the Prime Material Plane, usually you have them roll a wisdom save to try and retain their memories. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's like they just forget everything that happened while they were there, basically.
What happens in the Feywild stays in Feywild.
Exactly.
All
exactly.
Right, yeah.
So if those are the risks, what are the rewards for visiting the Feywild, right? For many magic users, the arcane is said to fester in the Feywild, and powerful magical sources can be found for those trying to cast the thickest of spells. whatever causes the magic here to be more powerful is probably the reason that so many of the Fae are infused with magic. Again, kind of a Loreboy's canon, I like to think the bright that the primordial saw was probably like some form of magic, which just means it's a more magical plane generally.
Fester's kind of a gross word. You said it like the magic festers there, like it's like, yeah. Spoiling.
That's what maggots do. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and fruit flies.
Yeah. Non-magical visitors to the plane likely still feel the effects of that magic, which is kind of just everywhere. Most who return and retain their memories report heightened senses and sensations. A rose might smell sweeter, but shadows are also darker and perhaps stretch further and are perhaps scarier in general. So good emotions are heightened, but bad emotions are also heightened.
This is a rave. They're just taking
some type exactly.
of mind altering. The key is to never stop partying.
Yeah. Try not to K-hole.
That's it.
So for some, like the Star Elves, they're, you know, this race of elves who grew up on Toril, as all elves did, not Eladrin. They actually returned to the Feywild. Basically, they were driven out of their home on Toril called the Urwood by humans. There's war with humans. So they left and went to the Feywild. Eventually, they like split their what they called the Sildaeur, which was their home on the Feywild. They split it off and created its own pocket dimension. And then during the spell plague, it got like snapped back in. But it gets a little crazy. But just to say, like some people or some elves have returned to the Feywild to try and escape Toril because they can kind of exist there more easily since it's in their blood, it's in their genes.
After their like pirate radio party yacht that just got sucked back into the dimension, basically.
Yeah, exactly. The Sildaeur itself is like hundreds of miles of untamed forests. The only thing breaking up the scenery is these huge glass citadels that the Star Elves live in.
Whoa.
That's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. I like it because I just started playing Oblivion again today, but like the glass armor from the elves was always like so strange to me. But when I read that, I had the same thought. I was just like, man, what is with elves and glass, you know?
I mean, knowing the source of the Elder Scrolls, they definitely took that from D&D.
Yeah.
But obviously in the Elder Scrolls, it's volcanic glass. So it's not,
it's harder to break.
It is. Yeah, exactly. It's not just like a chainmail made of like window material.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be like a wind chime. You're just like walking around with wind chimes, like strapped to you. Like,
Stealth 100. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the glass armor is light armor. It's the ultimate for a stealth build.
Yeah. So despite the various towns and cities, the majority of life in the Feywild lives pretty chaotically, not without the order that comes with a town or a city. The Pantheon is made up of two factions of variously chaotic gods and forces known as the Seelie and Unseelie Courts, which I mentioned before.
Yeah.
The Seelie Court is the good aligned court. It's split into two groups, the Inner Circle and the Outer Circle, representing major and lesser good divine of the Feywild. The Inner Circle is not necessarily more powerful than the Outer. It's just that the Inner Circle is those who pay direct homage to the greatest among them, Titania. The Inner Circle of Sylvan Gods respect Titania as queen and defer to her in matters of judgment. The Outer Circle of Gods, like Skerrit, god of centaurs, do not follow Titania, but there's a mutual respect between them. So
okay,
the Seelie Court is ruled by Titania, who's sometimes called Queen of the Summer Court. But there are those who are among it who don't necessarily view her as a queen, just view her as another powerful archfey.
Okay.
On the other side of the Pantheon is the creatively named Unseelie Court. It's a mirror opposite, where the Seelie Court is a place of laughter and frolicking that you'd expect from fairies and satyrs. The Unseelie Court is a place of hatred and malice. And
no pixie flutes.
Exactly. Pixie sticks growing through people's bodies and things like that.
Oh my God. Mythbusters, like they've got the gelatin dummy over top of the pixie sticks.
Just pixie sticks not growing because they don't grow.
People being waterboarded with Sprite or whatever.
It's in my nose.
There's a comedian, Todd Glass, who on the Daniel Tosh show got waterboarded with lemonade.
Oh my God.
he lasted like half a second, which apparently everybody who gets waterboarded lasts. It was like, yeah, I could take that. They last like half a second.
Yeah, because apparently it simulates drowning or something like that.
It's like people
instantly panic.
Yeah, people tap out instantly. It's your brain overrides whatever conscious part of you thinks that you can or knows that you're safe and it's just like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
And he's just like, he gets up. He's just like, well, the waterboarding wasn't that bad, but the lemon is just burning the back of my eyeballs. So the Unseelie Court is located in an immense cavern of black stone full of stalagmites and stalactites, all surrounding a single mountainous stalagmite upon which a throne stands. The throne is for the Queen of Air and Darkness, who I've mentioned before, the evil Archfey, and one sister of Titania.
Stalagmites from the ground, right? It's like tight T top M bottom.
Yeah. I always remember G ground C ceiling, but
okay,
whatever works for you.
Okay,
like astronomy and astrology. I remember that astronomy is the scientific study of the stars and planetary bodies, and astrology is the like star signs and you know Mercury in retrograde. And I remember it because L to me stands for lies, and astrology is a bunch of
There's crevasse too, for one's in ice and one's in ground, and the one that has ice in the word crevice is actually in the ground, and crevasse is
ice.
Yeah,
you got to remember crevice, crevasse is the opposite of what you think.
When will you ever need to say that shit, though, other than on a podcast, just to show off?
Yeah.
it's like being in math class. It's like, well, another day without using exponents. It's like another day without falling into a crevasse.
You mean like, crevice, idiot?
Yeah. You have like 5 minutes left on your cell phone, and you say crevice instead of crevasse, and they never find you. Like,
Yeah.
We were looking at ice.
Yeah. So the Queen of Air and Darkness is the queen of the Unseelie Court. She's evil. She was once the sister of Titania. As the story goes, she wasn't always wicked. So there is kind of this story about these dwarves bringing this gift to her, which turns her evil. Who those dwarves were, no idea. It is mentioned in this book, Carl Sargent's Monster Mythology, which was published in 1992.
Is it like a Munchkin Guild or whatever? Or no, the Lollipop Guild from Oz?
I don't know. Like, I found one reference to those dwarves, and then everywhere else it like referenced the gift that they brought, but nowhere else said like they brought it. So
okay.
She's corrupted by this gift, which is known as the Black Diamond. So from Carl Sargent's Monster Mythology, 1992. The wretched Queen of Air and Darkness haunts the Unseelie Court in pandemonium as a hovering, unseen, but very definitely perceived malign magical presence. From her twisted throne, she snaps her fingers to her enslaved evil elven and fairy servitors, the mindless undead which perform menial duties and which the evil fairies she torments can themselves torment in their turn, and to the hellhounds and yethhounds who slaver at her feet.
What's a yethhound?
It's a creature, a evil creature, basically. The queen is truly only a husk of a being, utterly corrupted by the ten-faceted black diamond, an artifact of vast magical strength and ineffable evil. The queen deals with no other evil deities and simply ignores them. Wretched beyond any hope of her own physical death, the soul-dead queen is driven to destroy what she herself once was, to drive the Seelie Court and the deep sylvan races down into darkness and destruction, leaving only the shells of their bodies remaining. Who or what created the black diamond is unknown, but some myths whisper that the dark god of the Underdark created it, and that his return may be dependent on the queen's despoilings.
Okay.
So, again, where it came from is pretty unknown. It's you know, this guy or this real world person is saying maybe it came from the Dark God of the Underdark, but I just don't think it's been canonized or defined yet for sure.
Theorizing so. Within his own fiction.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, the world of D&D and the world of Faerun, the Forgotten Realms, is all like collaborative storytelling where hundreds of authors at this point have, you know, published things which say certain things. And when you play your game, you can decide it comes from whoever the fuck you want it to. Right.
Yeah.
In mine, it comes from Peter, obviously. the big baddie in all my campaigns is Pete.
Him and his tinfoil dragon that he rides around. Yeah. Oh, wait, that's a good one. What's a bad one? I don't know.
What's the
dragon?
Yeah.
out of the kitchen drawer dragons. The wax paper is evil. Tinfoil is good.
And wax paper is definitely the unshiny aluminum foil. Like,
Yeah.
So the Queen of Air Darkness, clearly a pretty unpleasant lady. Not one you'd want to come across if you find yourself in the Feywild, probably. The twin goddesses of the Feywild mirror its inhabitants, who range wildly from the kindest folk to the most vicious creatures, though all are twinged with a sort of mischievousness, which, like I said before, kind of defines the plane. Those who belong to Titania's Seely Court are known as Seely Fey, generally good aligned, often honorable to visitors of the Feywild, though they do not welcome non-Fey to join their court. So if you visit the Feywild and you run into a Seely Satyr or a Seely Pixie, they'll be nice to you. They might play some pranks on you, but they'll be of the harmless variety. Peels, whoopee cushions, kind of like Jamie said. Those who follow the Queen of Air and Darkness are part of her unseely court, evil aligned, and represent the more dangerous or macabre places in the natural world. Again, bogs, things like that, right? Less trusting of visitors to the Feywild inherently, so they're slower to trust, but they are known to more often invite non-Fey to join their court. This is probably because they can recognize power better, maybe, but like they might invite a demon to join the Unseelie Fae and like sit on the court and be a presence there, which I thought was like an interesting parallel, where you get invited to the parties of the Seelie Court, but you don't get invited to the parties of the Unseelie Court, but you get invited to Parliament of the Unseelie Court, and you don't get invited to Parliament at the Seelie Court. So the latter, the Unseelie Court, is often hard at work to undermine the Seelie Court, though it's more often through games and cruel mischief than open violence and bloodshed. Again, the Feywild really is like chaos embodied more than if you guys remember the D&D alignment chart, it's, you know, a two directional grid where there's good and evil at opposite ends of the spectrum, and then there's lawful and chaotic at opposite ends of the spectral. You can have good and you can have evil in equal amounts in the Feywild, but generally you don't get law, you don't get order, it's all chaos kind of thing. So there's not really like a concerted effort to destroy the Seelie Court. It's more just like, hey, this one evil elf is going to decide to go out and play a prank which involves a bear trap and a punji pit smeared with elven feces, I guess.
God,
you know, and it's like, hi, epic prank. Fell in a tiger trap.
Bear trap, infected with feces, and then pie on the face. Oh, that one was cute.
It's the classic, like, you leave the door open a crack and there's a bucket of water at the top, but it's like just acid in the bucket instead of water, essentially.
Classic.
There are some, the Fomorians and the Hags, who I mentioned earlier, who are considered, and I loved this line, they're considered too ugly for either. And they're not even welcome among the Unseelie Court.
Oh, no.
Yeah, just you're too ugly.
Could you imagine if we had a standard where you're too ugly to be a politician?
Oh, I mean, maybe it would help. I don't know.
Yeah.
the Fomorians are an interesting people just before we wrap up. They were once the most handsome of all the giant races. Now they're twisted into horrible echoes of their former selves. They once lived in the Feywild and were allied with the elves, though over time, a lust for magic and the power that it brought drove them to try and conquer all of the Feywild to twist it to their own means. They sought to enslave the inhabitants of the Feywild and take their magic for themselves. The Fey folk fought back, and when they defeated the giants, they placed a curse upon them and their descendants. This warped their bodies to reflect the evil within and robbed them of their spellcasting abilities. since the Fomorians have primarily lived beneath the surface of the Feywild in the Feydark, and they're just these like horribly grotesque looking giants. Essentially, they have like gray purple skin, which I know we said purple is beautiful, but this is like an ugly purple, and they're just like covered in like random boils and tumors and ugliness. They have these like bulging yellow eyes, just kind of like bulge to either side of their either side of their head. They're
I thought it was pretty like ironic or whatever, since it's like the trickster, like they used to have a really nice strong jaw, but now it's just like an overpronounced jaw that like they bump on everything.
Oh, they were unchatted and turned into virgins basically.
Right. I mean that's basically what they were, because they were like the most beautiful giant race. Like they were known as that. They were the most powerful magically, and the curse specifically made them butt ugly and took away their ability to cast spells.
But ugly Martians, eh? The Fomorian also is a supernatural race from Irish mythology. I googled it. Jamie pulled up the clip, because Fomorian is used, I didn't mean to bring it up twice now, but like in Warframe there's a different thing as well, but it's like a machine. But also, yeah, also like a Celtic myth thing, where they are subterranean horrors in Irish folk myth.
In Irish myth, there you go. Cool. And that's my episode on the Feywild. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you guys learned something. If you like the episode, like I said at the top, head on over to the Discord to let me know, and let me know if you want to hear follow-ups, if you want to hear more info on any of these things. I'd love to talk more about it. But until then, you can listen to Pete let you know about what he's got going on in the world.
Instagram.com/theloreboys. That's not how that site works. At Loreboys Podcast on Instagram if you want to see the title cards. And then, loreboys.com/about for merch if you want to request merch, which I have been a little slow to update here and there. It's basically just like on a request, like, I would like a sticker of this. And I'm like, I'll get to it. There is a TeePublic website, TeePublic.com/theloreboys, where you can buy shirts or stickers or whatever. It's all got original drawings by yours truly. That's it for me. Leave us a review, of course, with that the almighty algorithm. 5 stars goes way further than anything else, frankly. Jimbo.
Yeah.
Jamie.
Loreboys.com/about. Get in the Discord, and I'll call you my little pog champ. That's all.
Yeah, woohoo, poggers gaming. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you like the episode, you like the show, you want to support us, best way to do it is probably to leave us a review. The next best way to do it is, of course, to give us money. You can do that at patreon.com/theloreboys. You'll find more info about our various tiers there.
Oh, that reminds me, actually, on the direct subject of the Patreon, one, thank you to all of our patrons. There's a couple of our patrons who have not responded to any of my messages to try and send them benefits. If you are in a tier that you deserve something that you have paid for, please reach out to us, because I need to. I would like to send you what you like truly, truly deserve. And there's 3 guys now whose names I really should have looked up that kind of just like money and ghosted. So I would like to give them what.
Or don't. If you want to ghost Pete, keep ghosting Pete. I do it all the time. of course, if you don't trust Patreon and you don't want Pete hounding you all the time to freaking do stuff for him, like tell him what you want, then we do have Loreboys Prime, where we are, of course, selling our homemade pixie sticks, guaranteed to have grown in the body of deceased people, where they festered to life, essentially. We've been visiting our local haunts and cemeteries to get the bodies to grow these pixie sticks in, and we want to get them to you. So all you guys got to do is sign up for the low price of, how much does a pixie stick cost? I know it was like 5 cents when I was a kid. Mm. Must be like 15 now.
I mean, with inflation, it's probably like 7 cents, frankly.
25. Yeah, a quarter. 25. I'd say we can charge 25, and I'll pick out as many of the red caps as I can from the bloody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're not guaranteed red cap free, but we do our best to control the number of red caps that
you know, we've got like metal straws and metal straws and paper straws at this point. Like, when are we coming for pixie sticks? the next thing we're gonna see is a sea turtle with a pixie stick stuck in its fucking nose.
Yeah.
And like, you just get like, and like a little paper thing would be easier to tear anyway. It's not a direct downgrade from a normal straw that makes your fucking, whatever, your iced coffee at Tim Hortons just taste like wet paper.
Yeah, whenever you're sitting at a coffee shop and just like hucking back pixie sticks, people will be able to like shake their head at you for more than one reason, because you have the plastic sticks. And,
it's now a moral thing. I'd like it if this show started the paper pixie stick movement.
Their crusade against plastic pixie sticks. I'm all for it.
Yep.
I guess that constitutes a lore boys.
Lore boys.
Out.
Out.
Down with big pixie, man.
Down with big pixie.
My name's James, and what about you guys?
Well, I don't know about this guy, but my name's Ethan. What about you, guy, huh?
My name's Peter. I'm hoping to give out at least barely enough audio to see if it's coming through all right.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.